This is an interview with Monty Montgomery. This is tape 11, side 2. You were talking about Vic Catillo.
Well, Vic had a very difficult time, as has Barbara Roberts. It's a terrible time to be the governor of the state, what with the fiscal yokes of responsibility and problems and concerns that all of them have. And it's very difficult to get anything exciting done beyond being able to partially fund those things that were and are necessary. So it was a difficult time, but Vic was never really a big idea guy. He was a doer and a good student of government, good student of the issues, but was never that persuasive. He was persuasive, became persuasive in the legislative halls because of his knowledge.
Right.
Became apparent on the tax issues principally. His knowledge of it became apparent over that 20 years or so. But I think anybody would have had a difficult time. I think Goldschmidt may have had some personal problems that prompted his move, but I think he was wise enough to see what was coming down the line. And what was coming would have been detrimental to any future political activity on his part.
Are you referring to the economy
and
Measure 5, the tax limitation and everything like that? So you felt that in part that was his reason for getting out when he did?
I think so.
How do you think he functioned as governor?
I liked him. I thought he did a good job. I thought he was an idea guy, and sometimes you could laugh at what he proposed, but also I felt he was very constructive, and I had the feeling when Neil went to Japan in behalf of the state of Oregon, that he was and I wasn't there, but I think I would have been proud of him. I think that he's a take charge guy and would have been there talking about Oregon, and he knew his product, and I think he would have, I think he did do a very fine job in that respect.
There was, you know, in that same group of moderate Republicans, Dave Frommeyer, who now lives here in Eugene, and he was Attorney General for a number of years. How did you see his performance?
Well, having witnessed some of it firsthand and being the recipient of some of his ire, I would have to say that I didn't agree with much that he did. The biggest mistake I ever made probably was when that ugly issue with the safe came about and Frommeyer was making his statements. I said, unfortunately, we have an overzealous Attorney General. Dave and I were never close. I knew him, obviously, and he lived here all the years I did. Well, not true, but many, many years, certainly during all of my political career. And I guess I just have to say that I don't think he's as, I don't feel that he's as strong and in leadership as others do. I don't know, there's just something about him, and it's not because of the controversy we've had over that safe issue. Totally, I didn't appreciate some of the things he did or still doing, and I didn't see that he made any great marks at all as part of the legislature. I was told periodically that he was pretty vocal on the Judiciary Committee, and made some good contributions, but I just never really pictured him as being that powerful leader.
Has your family played much of a role in your political life, in your political career?
Well, my kids put on bumper stickers and they went door to door and that kind of thing. And my wife has been just perfect. Anything I would want her to do, she just seemed to do without my suggesting it. And she has been great support. And we both knew in the Secretary of State's race, as long as 3 weeks out, that that they would take a mighty upset to win. And but by George, he was still there, walking with me or talking to the ladies privately, I mean, in her own efforts. And I, that just showed me what a great gal I had.
You know, a lot has been said about the, in Oregon particularly, of the citizen legislator. And how do you feel about that role model?
Well, I guess I have to, when I started, it was $500 for the biennium, and we got one round trip back home. I believe that's what it was. I appreciated the fact when the legislature passed the bill that said shall establish salaries of legislators as they do for any other state employees. I made it very clear at that juncture, it seemed to me, that we were indeed employees of the state of Oregon. And while separate from that, we were supposed to act in behalf of our constituency in the knowledge that we knew that we could, that the issue was clearly understood. But I get concerned when I see legislators spending full time at their job and they really aren't doing anything. I mean, there's nothing for them to do. I don't, it'd just be very difficult for me. And they can afford to do that now, particularly if their spouse is a part of the operation as well.
But wasn't that always the case? In fact, wasn't the spouse actually the person who brought in most of the money years and years ago?
Yes, oh yeah.
The legislator really didn't make that much,
that's
but the
right.
wife
the 500
was.
Yeah, that's right, yeah, yeah. And I didn't have any problem with that as long as they did the work of a secretary. That didn't bother me. I didn't really figure it was any of my business, to tell you the truth. But you knew who worked and who didn't. But in the interim, then when they started giving year-round per diem, year-round office expense, not year-round per diem, that's not true, office expense and other expenses, I think it put a little different light on it for me.
What would you, what changes would you make at this point if you could in the legislature?
Well, that's a good question. I've only been there twice since I last served, I mean, in the legislative process. I don't know of any great changes that I'd make. There'd be no way in the world I could propose that we go back to the citizen legislator.
Right.
And it's true, they don't make, here again, I hear people complaining about what those guys make, those U.S. senators and those, if they're legislators, and it is a program designed for a full-time legislator, I'd assume they pay them $100,000 a year and get the very best people they can. And boy, that would happen, I think, eventually. And I don't mean to take anything away from them, because most of them really make a contribution and a sacrifice to serve.
A little later on in the, after you left the legislature, then you were also involved with the, you moved to Portland, in fact, didn't you? And you were involved with the Market Group International.
Right.
Which imports metals and exports pulp, is that right? What did your involvement entail?
I was a one-man show.
Oh, I see.
That's not true. I had a couple of guys working for me, young kids, both from Eugene, that my daughter knew, and knew the family, and they were out of college, and I just brought them along to help me get the thing rolling. It never did get to rolling to the extent that I wanted it to, that I had hoped it would. But it was a tremendous experience. One of those boys now has a huge company that does nothing but sells gloves.
Gloves?
Markets gloves. welding gloves and bicycle gloves.
Huh.
That's all.
Interesting.
That's all. And he said, we set the program up initially, but we kept trying to find salespeople.
Right.
Factory outlet type people to take our line along with others. Mm-hmm. And that wasn't the way to go. Well, Bruce did it the right way. He just started going door to door on his own. He'd go to every welding shop and leave a pair or two pair, and that just got to rolling, and he has a fantastic business now.
Huh.
Yeah, it's marvelous. I'm real happy for him.
Was it 1978 that you joined the Oregon Association of Loggers in Eugene?
1977, uh-huh.
77?
Mm-hmm. August of 77. I was still in the import-export business in Portland, and a friend of mine who had been my neighbor here, and when I moved to Portland to start Market Group International, he was sales manager for Pape out here.
For who?
Pape. Caterpillar.
Right,
they
sure.
Now they own a lot of things, but
right.
then they were just the Caterpillar distributor. And so I remember going over next door, and they were sitting out on their patio, and we visited a while, and I told them that we were moving to Portland, going to sell the house and so on. And he said, well, you know, I've been thinking about the same thing. And I'd be darned if a week later he didn't resign from Pape. And he beat me to Portland. No, he didn't. I already had an office in Portland. He came to the same office building, the Cascade building, and hired the same accounting firm I did, and the same lawyers that I did. Hmm. And he just really got to rolling well when the distributorship of one of the tractor companies became available, and he put together a group guy and went out and bought it.
Hmm.
And did very well with it. About 5 years later, sold it. But anyway, he kind of fooled around for a year or so, and he had called on all this logging trade down here, and he came to me and he said, what do you think I ought to do? The loggers had me come over to their meeting at Hood River and so on and so forth. And want me to come back to Eugene, to Springfield, and run that operation for them. Well, what he didn't know was that I had told an old friend of mine who was in JC's, that was also a logger, that Lou Whaley would be a heck of a guy for them. And so anyway, we chatted about it and talked about salary and so on, and I encouraged him to go after it and to bump the salary, tell him he had to have more money. It was less than he'd made before and all that. And lo and behold, a guy came from the biggest Caterpillar distributorship in the world, from Kansas City, Kansas, mm-hmm. across the river. And they sold big diesel refrigeration units and all that kind of stuff. And he hired Lou as his president. Enormous salary, everything, you know. And by gosh, he went back there and was there 8 days, and they went to Peoria, the factory, and went out to dinner with the president of Caterpillar Company and walking back across the street, and Lou dropped dead. But anyway, through that whole process, he really looked at the AOL thing, and then he told them that he was taking this other thing, then he found out that I'd been to turn this guy loose on him initially and so on. And he said, well, Monty's the guy you ought to have. You ought to have somebody that has a legislative experience and banking mm-hmm. experience and so on. So they came and I said, heavens, no. No idea doing that. But I did. I finally came down and met with some of them, and I said, what I'll do is go back and I'll see if I can't find you someone.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's you're a wonderful guy, bunch of guys and so on. And a month later, 2 weeks later, they called and said, could you come down tomorrow afternoon and help us some? I said, yeah. And then he said, no, I want to level with you. We're really going to try to persuade you to take the job. And I said, well, I'll come down. Well, it was one day's notice, and they had 38 guys there from Astoria, from John Day, from Pendleton, and then, of course, elsewhere. I was tremendously impressed. I was really for them to do that on short notice. Anyway, we put the package together, and it was the most exciting job I ever had.
Really?
Yeah.
You became president then after
mm-hmm.
Just a little while, wasn't it?
At the end of my second year.
And what did you do for them? What was your?
I did everything.
Uh-huh.
We set up a pack. We hired Fred Van Atta on a very limited salary to kind of watch out for our interests. We started having meetings around the state and local chapters and so on, and our membership just mm-hmm. boomed. And then they already had a contract with Safe Corporation for workers' compensation,
mm-hmm.
and they signed a form when they went on the program saying, I pledge any dividends I may receive to AOL, and every one of them signed it. And so we used some of those proceeds to operate AOL with. And then we continued to grow and continued to grow, and then I served as chairman of the interim committee after Atiyah became governor.
Mm-hmm.
And part of the task force recommendation, it wasn't really our idea, but we endorsed it, was the formation or reclassification of Safe Corporation to a virtual private entity. And I served on that board. In the meantime, we had changed our contract twice with Safe, and we were able to save all the reserve funds. I mean, as long as we had enough for the reserves mm-hmm. for our account. And our rates kept going down, went down from $82 average to $19 per $100 payroll. Can you imagine paying $82 per $100 payroll? But we set up our own safety program, did a number of things, and we decided, heck, we've got all this dough here. The loggers ought to start their own workers' comp company. And then a year later, we'll change our health and accident program into that as well. And we did. And that's when the whole issue erupted.
Mm-hmm.
The Secretary of State got involved, and Frohnmayer got involved. And saying that we were illegally diverting the dividends. And they did a masterful job with some of our members who had signed a pledge form but didn't remember they had and all that stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But anyway, it just became a very ugly situation, and it's still going on.
It's still going on, mm-hmm. even now.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you joined SAFE at what point then? Huh? What, you were on the board at what point?
From
1979, wasn't it?
Yes, from 78 or 79. 79, yeah, after Vic was born. Mm-hmm. He spoke at our convention in January.
I see.
The Saturday after he was inaugurated. And appointed this and announced this committee and said I would be chairman.
Mm-hmm.
And that's when it started.
And what did he want you to do?
Well, at that time, the workers' comp was in terrible disarray. It really was. The management of it, they had started some programs in the legislature that really, two things, they started them without doing adequate research and gave the enforcement of it over to people who really were not experienced and knew what the problem was.
And right.
So it just became hell for the employers of the state of Oregon.
Mm-hmm.
It was very expensive, most expensive, either one or two, depending on what studies you showed in the U.S.
And what do you feel your main membership, your aside from the membership rise, your main accomplishments while you were there?
At AOL?
On SAFE, I'm thinking of.
Oh, at SAFE.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you take an entity like that from a public agency to a pseudo-private enterprise, particularly in the money market. You do lots of things, and I won't suggest that I did them alone. We had a seven-member board, I think, maybe five. Five-member board, I guess. But we, the board and the leadership, Chuck Gill et al., did several things that that we all thought, and we all became salesmen for the company. Per se. Mm-hmm. We'd go out and call on local prospects. They'd tell us, do you mind calling on this sawmill and just saying something good about us? And so on. Mm-hmm. So we did a certain amount of that, and we'd have little award parties where they'd give us, they gave me $10,000 one time and a big plaque about the size of a picture, Monopoly dollars.
Oh.
But all the ornate scribe around was great fun. But the company just grew, and at the same time AOL was growing. The mm-hmm. rates were going down. Guys, loggers that had never been members wanted to be members.
Mm-hmm.
And we were selective to a point. If they wanted to go on our insurance program, they had to comply with our rules. If their experience didn't get better, we put them on probation and kicked mm-hmm. them off of that program. Mm-hmm. Not out of state, not out of AOL, but off of the program until we could see evidence that they improved. Mm-hmm. And frankly, I did most of that myself. I'd use a committee of loggers mm-hmm. to report to periodically and make sure that when I had that interview with them, I told them, I don't know why you guys think you want me to come down. I don't know anything about logging, which is true. And one of the guys said, we know how to log. That's not our problem. We don't want you to tell us how to log. But we're worried about timber supply. We're worried about our costs. We're worried about employees that are faking injuries and all these kinds mm-hmm. of, you know, they'd go around their room, they'd list a number of them. So we just set about doing that. And I went to work for them in August, and they had their annual convention in January. And we had an absolutely fantastic Mark keynoted. Mark Hatfield keynoted. Oh. And this just shocked the heck out of those guys that Mark would be there. And then we had a formal dinner. They'd never had a formal dinner until that time. We tried to get rid of the word Jippo. They kidded me about that for a long time, but they finally began to call themselves professional loggers. They were proud of themselves. Mm-hmm. They dang well should be. I've never seen a working classification of people that could do as many things as a logger can do.
Mm-hmm.
He's got to keep books. He's an environmentalist. Say what you want. They're really strong mm-hmm. environmentalists, most of them. Anyway, they were a fascinating group, and I loved them dearly. And they said, run it like it's your own business. And I did.
And at what point did somebody call attention to what they thought were problems?
After we organized our own insurance company, the Attorney General's office got involved, and through them, the Secretary of State did an audit.
Right, that's what I was wondering. Yeah.
And the Secretary of State's audit suggested that the statutes of Oregon read this way and this way and this way, and that we had no authority to keep those dividends. And we certainly didn't have authority to use them for the operation of AOL. They belonged to the individual members who had earned them. But more than half of it was the group dividend. They each got their individual dividend, but the group was recognized as a policyholder in itself.
Right.
That was a package we put together with SAFE. So that was what we used for incentives. And I'd sit there and go right through that list, and the guy was entitled to $1,500. And if I had reports, which I got daily, mm-hmm. our safety guys called in every night and dictated their reports. And we had a little gal that worked all night long and typed them. And I saw those. I knew who the good risks were. So I'd penalize him $1,500, $2,500, just leave it in the AOL kitty.
Mm-hmm.
As time went on, I was up making pretty good salary, and 3 years in a row, I'd tell them what I was doing with the officers. I had five officers, staff, among the staff, and what I was doing with them, and some mm-hmm. pension type program that we implemented, funded by life insurance, supported, collateralized by life insurance, mm-hmm. I should say. Those kind of things, and 3 years in a row, they said, well, now, when are we going to do something on your salary? and they all testified this way. And in each of those instances, I said, you guys are being very good to me. And anytime I need anything that I think I need, whether it's for work or for the furtherance of my work, then I feel comfortable in taking it, so, and doing it. So I don't, I'm not that concerned about it. And Uncle Sam will take any more salary that you give me anyway. And so, but it, they came down and did an audit of AOL, and they found that we'd used the funds very well as far as the corporation was concerned, but then they got involved in some of the things that I had done on my own.
They said that somebody was diverted illegally, is that right?
That's what they said, yes.
At some point then AOL decided to let you go, is that
yes,
right?
Yes, but they did an audit. The Secretary of State's office did an audit, and the DA here in Lane County sent a letter out to all the officers and former officers of AOL listing, must have been 50 things that they had found in their investigation, in addition to the Secretary of State's office. And here they were in a private business doing this auditing all the while. And I met with them, and the biggest mistake I ever made in my life, I should not have said one word at any time. But I kept trying to explain to them how the dividends worked and all that kind of stuff, and then it all inured to my demise. They put this letter out, and just it really looked terrible. Just really was awful. In the final analysis, they took them all, 13 deals, they took me down in cuffs.
Really?
Yeah, picked me up at home, took me down after I'd been before the grand jury and all of those things. I said one time in the courtroom, I've met with the Attorney General's office or the District Attorney's office 36 times, and seldom do they run less than an hour. Many times they last all day. And I've tried to tell them everything I know. I've never concealed anything. They finally convicted me of $4,200 in misappropriation with expense accounts.
Mm-hmm.
And what that was, they were absolutely right. They were absolutely right. But I didn't realize it was taking place. That it still was my fault. But I was on the board of American Savings, and American Savings would send me a check after every meeting that I'd put in my own bank account, and that I was buying airplane tickets to go to Salt Lake for the board meeting, and AOL was paying the bill for it, and it was stupidity on my part.
And all the other felony counts of theft and
yeah, it was all dismissed.
And falsifying business records was all dismissed.
Yeah.
And
the only thing that remains is that the courts, the circuit court kicked it. The circuit court here on the criminal case convicted me, and I paid the $4,200 and I paid some fines, and then this, at the same time, this, the lawsuit that SAFE has against me and Chuck Gill and others went through the circuit court in Salem, and 2 years later, the judge, they kicked it out. It went to the Court of Appeals. They affirmed what the court had done. The SAFE took it on up to the Supreme Court, and they said, we agree with all you've done except the issue. We find no evidence that you have determined the issue of whether Montgomery violated the trust as a member of the SAFE Board of Directors by not telling the other directors he was indeed forming an insurance company that would ultimately complete against SAFE. So that's where we are. They've spent over $2 million.
Really?
And I've spent all I have. And I ain't going to spend no more.
So those are the only unresolved. That's the only unresolved.
That's one unresolved question.
Issue.
Yeah.
And, boy, if you had to do it all over again, would you do things differently, or?
I would not say a word to anybody. That's where
Did you have any legal representation when you were saying these things?
Yeah.
Having these discussions?
Yeah. But the guy that was doing it was not a defense attorney. He was our business attorney. And he told me on occasion, cooperate, but don't if they ask you a question, answer it and let that do it. And then he ultimately suggested that I get a criminal attorney when it was obvious they were really going
right.
to go after me hammer and tong. Right. And he did. Ken Morrow then came in and took the case over. And it went on for 2 years, 2.5 years.
Really?
Not the trial, but issues leading to that trial.
Did you ever spend any time in any institutions then as a result of that?
One night.
That must have been very difficult for you.
Oh, it's terrible.